Hello, welcome to Second Impressions, the Pride and Prejudice podcast. My name is Grace,
And I'm Tom.
and we're going through Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice chapter by chapter. And today we are reading Volume 3, Chapter 12. But Tom, why don't you give us a quick recap on what happened in Chapter 11?
So chapter 11 begins with Lydia and Wickham finally leave for the north for their effective banishment, which Mrs. Bennet doesn't understand, but she's very upset that Lydia has left her life, but fortunately she is consoled shortly after by the arrival of none other than Bingley, who's coming back to Netherfield. Mrs. Bennet tries to convince Mr. Bennet to go over and talk to him again. Mr. Bennet's like, no way, did that once. Mrs. Bennet then plans, like, comes up with the idea that she's going to throw a dinner party in which Wickham, I mean, I'm not sorry, I'm sorry, not Wickham, Bingley will be invited to, two very different characters.
Wickham is no longer part of the
Wickham's
picture.
gone. Yeah, he's in the north, he's in the regular army. Yeah, and so, but before Mrs. Bennet even gets a chance to invite Bingley over to this dinner, who should arrive at Longbourn but Bingley himself, along with Mr. Darcy, and they chat for a few minutes. Mrs. Bennet acts horribly. I feel like I've definitely said that phrase in a lot of other summaries. And then it ends where they all agree that they're going to come over to dinner. And Bingley and Jane's, it was a little chilly between them at first, between Bingley and Jane, but as that interaction went on, they started to talk more and become a little bit more acquainted. But Darcy was very distant the whole time, pretty much back to his normal reserved self. Okay, Grace, will you give us a little summary of chapter 12?
Sure. So in chapter 12, the dinner arrives. The Bennets throw a party, invite a bunch of people, but most importantly, she invites Bingley and Darcy. After some initial, I don't know, initial like uncertainty about where Mr. Bingley will seat himself, he decides to sit right next to Jane, much to the delight of Mrs. Bennet. Darcy has unfortunately been tasked with sitting next to Mrs. Bennet, and Elizabeth, from the farthest edge of the table, can only watch Darcy and Mrs. Bennet interact very coldly, if ever at all. She is, mortified that Mrs. Bingley is behaving in this way because, once again, Mrs. Bennet just has no idea that basically the whole family owes their lives and reputations to Mr. Darcy. And what's worse, Mr. Darcy does not even seem to be paying attention to Elizabeth, which irks her. She is confused by why he's here if he's not even gonna like say hi or pay attention to her. But then she also, gets mad at herself for thinking about this because, of course, the most important couple at this table right now is Bingley and Jane. After the party's over, and then after the party, Mrs. Bennet once again says Bingley will propose to Jane. It is a sure thing, and she's gotten the approval and agreement of like every other lady at this party that Bingley will absolutely propose to Jane. When she's talking to Elizabeth, insists that she and Bingley are just friends now, and she will just, enjoy his company as a friend and nothing more. And Elizabeth says that that is absolutely ridiculous and untrue. In true sisterly fashion, teases Jane for that. And that is how the chapter ends. Not a whole lot of action, but
This is a little break in the action after everything that has just happened.
perhaps setting the stage for future actions. All right.
Yes, once again, we're at a party where Darcy is basically silent the whole time. Not that we've seen that before in this book. All right, let's get into it. You want to start reading for us, Grace?
Chapter 12. As soon as they were gone, Elizabeth walked out to recover her spirits. As soon as Darcy and Bingley left.
I think this is just like a common thing that happens in a lot of these chapters where we're literally picking up, like, this is a continuation of the final sentence from the previous chapter, basically.
As soon as they were gone, Elizabeth walked out to recover her spirits, or, in other words, to dwell without interruption on those subjects that must deaden them more. than was dead in her spirits more.
Okay, let's pause here. So this is kind of a sarcastic sentence. Grace, do you want to break this down for us? Yeah, sure.
So Elizabeth has to, you know, take a breather just to get some air. But in other words, you know, one can say she's going out to get some air. Another way to interpret it is that she's going somewhere more secluded so that she can dwell on these things that are deadening her spirits, such as just how aloof Darcy is all of a sudden now towards Elizabeth.
Yeah, so Elizabeth sets out. This is like, I think the movement here is Elizabeth sets out on a walk for the purpose of clearing her head from all of like the thoughts that are swirling around, right? These spirit deadening thoughts, such as like, what is Darcy doing here if he's just going to ignore me again?
Yeah.
So this is her intent in leaving to go on a walk, is to clear her head of these thoughts. But once she's out there, all she's doing is just dwelling on them more, right?
Yeah, in peace.
Yeah.
The irony of dwelling on them in peace.
Or, and I love how this is phrased, so she walked out to recover her spirits, or, in other words, to dwell without interruption on those subjects which must deaden her spirits more.
Yeah, that's so funny.
I feel like Austin, similarly to the sentence in the last chapter where it's like, Elizabeth was thinking how not even years of happiness would take away how uncomfortable these moments were between Darcy and Bingley and her mother. And then that feeling, those years of happiness, like that feeling, the misery that will never be taken away by years of happiness is relieved immediately when Bingley starts talking to Jane, right?
Yeah.
I think Austin is like tweaking Elizabeth a little bit more here in these chapters now than previous. What do you think?
Yeah, Elizabeth is going through like a bit of a metamorphosis. She is, this is the first time I think where the ball is actually in Darcy's court in terms of their courtship, no pun intended, where like now she is, you know, she is unraveling. She doesn't know what he's thinking. She doesn't know what he's doing here. She's like, oh, if only I could like get into his mind or something like that. But like this whole time, I think, you know, like Elizabeth has had all the power, but here it's like Darcy is the one with the power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what we're seeing is like Elizabeth is being made unsure of herself, which is, we've seen like glimpses of it. It's become more and more prominent as the book has gone on, but I think this is the most unsure of herself that we've seen her, and questioning her own perceptions and judgment.
Yeah. It's also just a genius line from Jane Austen in like showing like both what the character thinks they're thinking versus, like, what they're actually thinking.
Yeah, like, the perception versus the reality.
Yeah. and lo and behold, it goes on to say, Mr. Darcy's behavior astonished and vexed her.
Yeah, yeah, so...
Yeah.
She just didn't know what to make of Mr. Darcy's behavior and why. Well, how is he acting?
His usual cold self. Uh-huh. Not usual, I shouldn't say usual anymore, because now we know the true Darcy, but the Darcy from, like, the first time that we meet him.
From Volume 1. Yeah. Volume 1 Darcy,
Yeah. Why, if he came only to be silent, grave, and indifferent, said she, did he come at all?
Good point. Yeah, what's he doing here? What is Darcy's, like, plan here? He's just showing up to be, like, moot around and be silent.
She could settle it in no way that gave her pleasure.
I like it. So she can come up with guesses as to why it's here, but the only guesses she can think of are not the things she wants to hear.
Yeah, it's not the answer she's looking for. He could still be amiable, still pleasing to my uncle and aunt when he was in town. And why not to me? If he fears me, why come hither? If he no longer cares for me, why silent? Teasing, teasing man! I will think no more about him. That's funny.
So, it's a good point, because we know from Mrs. Gardiner's letter that he was just in London with them, with the Gardiners, like, almost acting like one of the family, like, hanging out in the house, having dinner with them.
Yeah, going fishing with his uncle, and, yeah, having dinners with them.
So, if he's acting this way around the Gardiners, who he knows much, like, for a much shorter amount of time than he knows Elizabeth, why is he acting this way now at Longbourn, right?
Yeah. Also, I should clarify, teasing is not the teasing as we understand. Teasing kind of just means, like, irritable. Like, he is being so irritating right now. And I will think no more about him.
I don't know. Do you think... I don't think Elizabeth would actually think that he's, like, teasing her as we know it, right?
She's, like... I mean, I think she's, like, genuinely confused right now. She's just, like, confused as to why he's here. If this whole time they've gotten to know each other, he has shown himself to be, you know, very, like, amiable and conversational and all that, just to revert back to his usual, his like initial like volume one self.
We could talk about this more as the chapter goes on, but I guess just a general question I can throw out there now is, why do you think Darcy is behaving like this? Why has he snapped back to Volume One Darcy now?
Well, because I mean, he's he's at Longbourn.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. He's not as comfortable around like the elder, any other the Bennet parents especially. He is nowhere near as comfortable around them as the Gardeners. That's one reason.
Yeah. The Gardeners are also they're a differing sort of people. They're not quite as like simple, I think, as the like Meryton folks are.
They're from London. Even if they
Yeah.
live in an unfashionable district, they still like live in London.
Right. Darcy is not so humble that he can just pre like suddenly like well, he would never pretend in his life, but he can't just sort of like he's not so humbled as to like be like part of the Meryton gang now.
Especially Mr. and Mrs. Bennet, who
Yeah.
are like uncultured, like I don't know, tough people to be around in any
Yeah.
scenario. All right, well, let's keep going then.
Okay. Her resolution to think no more of Darcy was for a short time involuntarily kept by the approach of her sister, who joined her with a cheerful look, which showed her better satisfied with their visitors than Elizabeth. I like that. So yeah, it's like Elizabeth's like, I will think no more of him. And it's almost like, unfortunately, she had to keep this promise to herself because Jane showed up. But if Jane hadn't showed up, she probably would have immediately broken that promise.
Kept thinking of him in the same way that she went to take a walk to clear her head
Yeah.
of all these Darcy thoughts and then proceeded to think of Darcy more.
Yeah.
Yeah, but fortunately, here's Jane to distract her for a little bit. And Jane says, "Now that this first meeting is over, I feel perfectly easy. I know my own strength, and I shall never be embarrassed again by his coming, by Bingley's coming. I am glad he dines here on Tuesday. It will then be publicly seen that on both sides we meet only as common and indifferent acquaintance." So why Jane comes up to Elizabeth looking cheerful, right? And remember at this meeting, at this little visit that Bingley and Darcy came over for, Jane and Bingley were talking like very friendly, right? Talking like old friends, smiling and laughing. And why is Jane happy about this?
Well,
Why does she profess that this makes her happy?
because she knows she's happy that she can comport herself around him. Like she knows now it's sort of like now you she knows how she's going to behave around him, and she thinks she did a job well done in like hiding how much she actually cares for Bingley.
Yeah, Jane is not like, okay, we don't really know what's going on beneath Jane's thoughts and her like raw emotion, but this is what Jane says and what I think she believes to herself is she is happy about this like friendly interaction she just had with Bingley because it kind of proves that like there's no resentment over like the jilted romance, right? It's kind of like seeing like an ex at like a party and having like a friendly conversation with that person and being, I don't know, the satisfaction after that is not like, oh, we're in love again. It's like, oh,
We both got over
yeah, we're over
it. We're both over it
it,
now.
right? So that's what Jane is saying. Like, this
Yeah.
conversation, this friendly conversation I had with Bingley is proof that we are both over this little romance and we can be friendly and normal around each other again.
Yeah. Yes, very indifferent indeed, said Elizabeth laughingly. Oh, Jane, take care.
What's Elizabeth thinking?
She's like, this is bullshit. Like, oh, Jane, you go on and you continue to feel that way. If that's what, if that's what makes you feel better, then you go ahead and you let yourself think that.
Yeah, because I think just based on the little bit we saw of the last visit and what we're going to see at this party, they don't act around each other like common and different acquaintance. That's basically like they are making polite small talk as being a common and indifferent acquaintance.
Yeah. And if we saw in the last chapter, they started out with like polite conversation, but then they couldn't help it. They couldn't help it. They could only be drawn to each other, and they like talk to each other the whole night.
And that's what Elizabeth she sees, and she's
Yeah.
like, "All right, Jane, whatever you say, right?
Yeah.
But be careful."
Yeah.
And why, what do you think this take care is saying? Take care of what? Be careful about what?
Well, I think she answers it later down here. Like, take care, like, I don't know. Like, just, like, look out for yourself, maybe.
Like, watch your heart, maybe.
Watch your heart,
right?
A little bit,
okay,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll keep reading. So then Jane responds to this by saying, "My dear Lizzie, you cannot think me so weak as to be in danger now." In danger of falling in love with Bingley again, I think.
Yeah. Elizabeth goes, "I think you are in very great danger of making him as much in love with you as ever."
Aww. Well, so she kind of twists it around a little bit. Jane's like, "Don't worry, Elizabeth. Don't think me in danger of, like, still being gaga over Bingley." And Elizabeth's like, "You're not the one in danger. Bingley's the one in danger."
Of being gaga over you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think this is interesting because Elizabeth, in the past, she has whatever suspicions she had about Bingley still having feelings for Jane, Elizabeth has taken care to not mention it to Jane because she doesn't want to get Jane's hopes up. But I think after this interaction between Bingley and Jane, Elizabeth's like, it's safe to say that Bingley is still very much in love with Jane.
Uh-huh. Yes, and Jane does not know that Darcy broke up their relationship the first time. I don't believe, right?
No.
I think Elizabeth keeps that back.
Mm-hmm.
So Elizabeth has, that's even more information than Jane has, which is that it's not like Bingley just like woke up one day and is like, oh, I'm over Jane, you know. Mm. He was specifically directed by like one of his best friends, like, don't get involved with this woman.
Yeah. And now not only is Bingley here, but Bingley is here with Darcy's blessing, essentially.
Uh-huh.
So more evidence to Elizabeth's prediction that Bingley is still in love with Jane and now has sort of license to act on it.
All right. Yeah. Well, there's a great moment coming up
between
Darcy and Bingley. We'll get to it soon. Okay. And then we have like a break here.
Yes.
There is my book has a line. I see that in your book also, Grace. Mm-hmm. Just like a break in the chapter.
Yeah. Because nothing else happens. In like Jane Austen's true Jane Austen fashion, we skip the parts that are not interesting and jump ahead towards Tuesday.
Well, let's just get to this party already.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Here, I'll keep going. So we have the break, and then it says, "They did not see the gentleman again till Tuesday," Darcy and Bingley, "till Tuesday when the party was. And Mrs. Bennet, in the meanwhile, was giving way to all the happy schemes which the good humor and common politeness of Bingley in half an hour's visit had revived."
Great. So now Mrs. Bennet is in full Mrs. Bennet mode again. Just in her happy schemes.
Mm-hmm.
What are those happy schemes?
Which are, they're all around Jane and Bingley getting married. And then I'm sure she takes it way further than that.
Like, oh, yeah.
Oh, and then, you know, Jane will move into Netherfield Park and they'll build a giant extension. And they'll build an extension that leads right into Longbourn. And it will become one massive house.
Yes. Yeah, so all the usual schemes, which had been revived by just a half hour of Mr. Bingley's good humor and common politeness.
Right.
Just him being himself has revived all of Mrs. Bennet's wildest ambitions for Jane and Bingley.
It almost seems a little paradoxical, like, when Jane is like, oh, you know, Bingley was just being commonly polite, Elizabeth's like, yeah, sure he was. But now the author's like, Mrs. Bennet is building, like, these castles in the air based on Bingley's common politeness.
Yeah.
I think that's mostly referring to, like, his common politeness toward Mrs. Bennet herself, right?
I think so, yeah. Mrs. Bennet certainly can't tell the difference between common politeness on Bingley's and his actual, like, favor towards Jane.
I think this is me reading way into the characters, so this is not what Austen's saying, this is, like, my own perceptions, but, like, Mrs. Bennet, it's almost secondary to her that he was talking to Jane. Like, the true, like, interaction of that meeting was her and Mr. Bingley,
oh, yeah,
right?
Totally.
It's everything Mr. Bingley said to her, right? It's, like, the common politeness Bingley showed towards Mrs. Bennet that convinces her that he's gonna marry Jane.
Yeah, because she owes it. He owes it to her.
Yeah, you're a debt in my... You owe me a visit.
Yeah,
right?
You are in my debt.
Right, exactly. And it's just, this Mrs. Bennet thinks that to woo her daughters is to woo herself.
Okay. On Tuesday, there was a large party assembled at Longbourn, and the two who were most anxiously expected, to the credit of their punctuality as sportsmen, were in very good time. So who are the two who are the most anxiously expected?
Bingley and Darcy, of course. Yes. Especially Bingley, the guest of honor.
And I think this is a joke. To the credit of their punctuality as sportsmen. Because they, you know, the reason, the alleged reason that they came back to Netherfield was to hunt for sport.
Yeah, and yet they are able to stop just in time so that they arrive right on time for this party.
Well, everyone knows, you know, sportsmen are just nothing but punctual.
It's also like, this is the sport they're here for, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
Bingley didn't really come to hunt birds.
That's a different kind of bird.
Exactly.
Okay. When they repaired to the dining room, Elizabeth eagerly watched to see whether Bingley would take the place, which, in all their former parties, had belonged to him by her sister.
Mm-hmm.
So they come into the dining room. Elizabeth is watching him.
She's like looking at Bingley. He enters the room.
Yeah,
right?
Talk about who's the true hunter here. She's like looking at him like, well, where's he going to sit? Mm-hmm. Is he going to sit where he has been sitting in all of the times he's dined with us, which is right next to Jane?
Yes.
Her prudent mother, occupied by the same ideas, forbore to invite him to sit by herself.
Okay, what does that sentence mean? Forbore to invite Bingley to sit by herself.
Like, she prevented herself from this. Yeah, she was occupied by the same ideas of having Bingley sit next to Jane. So she, Mrs. Bennet, sort of willed herself to prevent herself to invite Bingley to sit next to her. To sit next to Mrs. Bennet.
Yeah, Mrs. Bennet, the true desire of Mrs. Bennet's heart is that Bingley would sit next to her and talk to her the whole meal. But being, you know, strategic as she is, she's like, I have to sacrifice this momentary pleasure to put him next to Jane, right? So that they can get married. And then I can dine next to Bingley every night of my life.
Yeah, the forbore is a joke. Like, she forbore this desire to ask Bingley to sit next to her in favor of having him sit next to her daughter.
Yeah, and it's just like, Mrs. Bennet, she feels like she is the one both wooing and being wooed by Bingley, and Jane is almost secondary
Yeah,
here.
Jane is almost like her placeholder.
It's an interesting contrast to the Wickham-Lydia match, which Mrs. Bennet had nothing to do with.
Mm.
Maybe she feels like this is like her way to reassert some power over her daughters.
I think so, yeah, yeah. She's like, well, if I couldn't control my other daughter's proposal, I can at least, you know, play the master in this one.
I feel like she's taken an especially active role in now Bingley and Jane 2.0.
Yeah.
Whereas before, of course, she was incredibly active. You know, it's her doing that Jane gets stuck at Netherfield in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like here it's really Mrs. Bennet is the star of the show in her mind. You know, she's the one who spies Bingley from the dressing room. She's the one who talks to him, right?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. She is the one, she's keeping everyone, like, on a much shorter leash this time around, down to, like, where they're allowed to sit.
Right. And now, for the greater good, she has forbore Bingley's presence for the meal.
On entering the room, Bingley seemed to hesitate, but Jane happened to look round and happened to smile. It was decided. He placed himself by her. Ooh.
I feel like this is a very visual, like, almost cinematic moment here. So what happens? Bingley enters the room and he's looking around for where to sit, right?
Yes. So first of all, her mother has this empty chair next to her, presumably. She's like, next time. I'll get him next time.
Yeah.
Bingley comes into the room. He's kind of like, he hesitates. He looks around. He's not sure where he's supposed to sit. And then Jane also happens to look around at him.
Mm-hmm. Just at that moment when he's standing in the doorway trying to find a seat, right?
And just happened to smile.
Yeah, she was just coincidentally smiling at that moment.
It was decided.
Yeah.
Do you think Jane was fishing here? Do you think she's also hunting for sport here?
I think the smile is not coincidental, even though it's phrased like that sarcastically. It might be like almost, you know, the works of fate that she happens to look at that same moment. Who knows?
I want to say it's like, if we know Jane, it's like Jane maybe doesn't like knowingly realize what she's doing, but I think she's doing it with intention.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The happen to look around and the happen to smile. The happen to smile is, like, pure sarcasm. That's a joke. No one is just, like, coincidentally smiling.
Smiling.
I think the fact that it has also happened to smile makes the happen to look around seem less coincidental also, right?
Yeah.
So I like your reading. I think that's a good way to look at this is, like, even if Jane is not consciously saying, like, let me catch Bingley's eye, that's going through some, like, subconscious thought process.
Yeah, it's almost like her facial muscles couldn't help but try to catch him.
And it works.
And it works.
And he goes and sits down by her.
Of course. Where else would he have sat?
Well, maybe if Jane is explaining this to herself in this moment, I think she's like, oh, now we'll really get to publicly show how over we are to each other. Right?
Yeah, look at us former, or not even, just like, look at us being friends with each other, sitting next to each other.
Right. Oh, this is the ultimate proof that there's no attachment still. That's like seeing an old ex at a party and then, like, having intense conversation the whole night and then walking away and be like, I'm glad everyone saw how well we're not attached anymore,
yeah,
right?
And no one could have thought anything else other than we're just friends.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Elizabeth, with a triumphant sensation, looked towards his friend.
A.K.A.
Darcy.
Mr. Darcy.
He bore it with noble indifference.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is a great juxtaposition. The Jane sees Bingley, smiles, Bingley sits next to her. Elizabeth, very next sentence, looks at Darcy, and Darcy, quote, bears it with noble indifference, like stands there emotionless, right?
And she would have imagined that Bingley had received his sanction to be happy had she not seen his eyes likewise turn towards Mr. Darcy with an expression of half-laughing alarm. Okay.
Oh, well, here I'm thinking now, do you think he bore it with noble indifference? Do you think that's referring to he bore Bingley sitting next to Jane?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so Elizabeth looks to Darcy to see how he reacts to this moment.
Yes.
And Darcy is blank-faced. Yes. And I think that's Elizabeth's words, noble. I think Elizabeth's word is noble here,
right? Yeah.
Noble indifference. He's like a regal sort of indifference.
I think the noble is a joke, because it's like, oh, wow, look how noble Darcy is by allowing his friend to sit next to the woman he loves.
Well, it's like Elizabeth is almost like he still is seeing some of the distaste in Darcy still for this
right.
match.
I guess he has evolved from, like, grimacing to, like, to like being indifferent.
I just see him as, like, a king, like, looking at, like, some rabble down below and is like, well, I'll allow it. I'm not happy about it, but...
Okay, Elizabeth would have imagined that Bingley had received Darcy's sanction to be happy, a.k.a. his blessing to propose...
to Mary Jane.
Yeah. Had she not seen Bingley's eyes likewise turn towards Mr. Darcy with an expression of half-laughing alarm.
So this was the passage I referred to earlier, this interesting moment between Darcy and Bingley. So Elizabeth sees Darcy watching Bingley and Jane talking, and he's bearing it with noble indifference. And after she sees that, she imagines that Darcy has given Bingley his sanction to, like, basically get engaged to Jane, right?
Yeah, Darcy gave him, like, a small nod of approval.
So this is what Elizabeth thinks at first. But after seeing him display this noble indifference, Elizabeth then sees Bingley, like, look back real quick at Darcy with an expression of half-laughing alarm. And this makes... Elizabeth think maybe he doesn't have Darcy's full approval yet.
Right, because it says she would have imagined that Bingley had received Darcy's blessing to be engaged to Jane. Had Elizabeth not seen Bingley's eyes then turn towards Mr. Darcy with an expression of half-laughing alarm. So there's something unspoken right now between Bingley and Darcy. Darcy is, like, basically observing them. And Bingley is looking at Darcy, observing them with a half-laughing alarm.
That's a very interesting phrase, half-laughing alarm. It's not like this is a cliche that, you know, it immediately conjures up in our heads what that means. Kind of see Bingley as, like, almost like, you know, a schoolboy, like, looking at an elder, doing something that he's, like, not entirely sure is okay. And he's like, is this okay? Are you going to say something? Right.
Well, Bingley's always, you know, amiable and good humored. So like this half laughing, I think, might just be Bingley being Bingley. But the alarm comes through, which I think is unusual for us to see Bingley in that way. So yeah, I think it's sort of like he is observing, he's watching Darcy observe him, kind of like this is sort of like almost like an audition or something. Like Bingley knows his and Jane's relationship is sort of like being put on trial in the eyes of Darcy, mm-hmm. King Darcy. So Elizabeth is very perceptive. She sees this and she realizes like, oh, it seems like this isn't all clear cut yet. Like it's not like Bingley is 100% ready to propose to Jane. It looks like Bingley is sort of still at the beck and call of Darcy.
Yeah, like Elizabeth, we don't know exactly what's going on between Bingley and Darcy. So we just have to base it on these visuals that we have. Mm-hmm. But I think it's safe to say that, like, some degree of sanction was advanced by Darcy, right? Like, obviously they're there. They're both there. Mm-hmm. But maybe, like, not all the way. He didn't quite give Bingley his full approval. Bingley's still like, you see? Are you looking? Doesn't it look like she loves me, right?
Yeah. Okay. Bingley's behavior to her sister was such, during dinner time, as showed an admiration of her, which, though more guarded than formerly, persuaded Elizabeth that, if wholly left to himself, Jane's happiness and his own would be speedily secured.
Okay. This is kind of similar to that other line in the last chapter about how Jane was the same but less chatty.
Yeah.
So Bingley's, like, has been affected in a similar way. His behavior is very similar. It seems like he admires Jane just as much, but he's acting a little bit more guarded, right? Mm-hmm.
But then the guardedness, Elizabeth attributes that if wholly left to himself, mm-hmm. Jane's happiness and his own would be speedily secured. So, you know, he's not alone here.
So where's that guardedness coming from, according to Elizabeth?
I think it's coming from Big Brother Darcy.
Yeah, yeah. So if left wholly to himself and not Darcy's opinion, then Bingley would just propose to Jane right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you mentioned this in previous chapters in regards to the term felicity, but happiness is also kind of a shorthand for marriage.
Yes.
When Elizabeth's like, their happiness would be secured, it's kind of like their marriage would be secured.
Yeah. Especially with the addition of secured there. Like, how do you secure happiness? You secure it by putting a ring on it.
Exactly. Locking it down.
Though she dared not depend upon the consequence of this engagement. Mm-hmm. She yet received pleasure from observing his behavior.
Yeah, although Elizabeth didn't depend on what the consequence of this present behavior would be, mm-hmm. she derived pleasure from viewing it. And yeah. What would the consequence of this behavior be?
A proposal.
It's not a consequence in any, like, punishment type right. way. Yeah, it's just the natural sequence of events, mm-hmm. right? Like, A leads to B.
It gave her all the animation that her spirits could boast. For she was in no cheerful humor. Yeah, so this is like as much joy as could be mustered by Elizabeth, because she is peeved.
Yeah, she's feeling as happy as she can for Jane, despite the fact that she is not happy at all right now.
Mr. Darcy was almost as far from Elizabeth as the table could divide them.
Yes, and this is why Elizabeth is not happy at the moment.
He was on the side of her mother. She knew how little such a situation would give pleasure to either or make either appear to advantage.
So not only have they been, like, sundered up different parts of the room, but now her mother is close to him too, right?
Yeah. Her mother is where Elizabeth should be sitting. She was not near enough to hear any of their discourse, but she could see how seldom they spoke to each other and how formal and cold was their manner whenever they did.
Mrs. Bennet must really think of herself as a martyr in this situation. Like, I gave up sitting next to Bingley, and I sat next to the man I detest the most. I hope Jane sees what I'm doing for her.
Her mother's ungraciousness made the sense of what they owed him more painful to Elizabeth's mind, and she would, at times, have given anything to be privileged to tell him that his kindness was neither unknown nor unfelt by the whole of the family.
So just reiterating here, again, what we talked about in the last chapter, how, like, ironic it is that Mrs. Bennet is treating Darcy so shabbily when he was the one who rescued Lydia.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth is like, I really wish I could just tell him that I know what you did.
Yeah. It's like, oh, if I were sitting next to him right now, I would tell him this exact thing, that his kindness was neither unknown nor unfelt by the whole family.
The whole family, yeah. Meaning that even though Mrs. Bennet doesn't know it, yeah, you know, she knows it. Some Bennets know mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. It also means she's ready to just spill the beans on what Mrs. Gardner told her in the letter, and maybe even told her not to tell anyone. Elizabeth was in hopes that the evening would afford some opportunity of bringing them together, that the whole of the visit would not pass away without enabling them to enter into something more of conversation than the mere ceremonious salutation attending his entrance.
Hmm.
So Elizabeth is desperate to talk to him. Hmm. It's like he is 100% all that is consuming her mind right now. It's like getting a chance to talk to him, like, and the, one-on-one.
The only conversation they've had up to this point is just saying, like, hello to each other as he came in the door, like, greetings, ceremonious yeah. greetings.
Uh-huh. The ceremonious salutation. Anxious and uneasy, the period which sat in the drawing room before the gentleman came was wearisome and dull to a degree that almost made her uncivil.
Okay, will you just give us a brief background on
yeah, sure.
On the etiquette of yeah. these dinner parties? Yeah.
We might have, if you guys have seen like Downton Abbey or something, you might be familiar. But basically, at dinner time, everyone is in the dining hall eating yeah. and then afterwards the ladies are the first to get up and then move over to the tea room, the drawing room, mm-hmm. a different room
yeah
where the tea and coffee will be served.
The gentlemen and ladies split up for a little bit.
The gentlemen then stay at the dinner table to like
smoke cigars and talk, I guess.
Boys being boys.
Some boys time after dinner
before they then join the ladies in the whatever room is next.
Uh-huh.
So for a brief period, the ladies are kind of alone to themselves in the drawing room or tea room.
Which is so wearisome and dull, especially to Elizabeth, who like desperately wants to talk to Darcy, that it almost makes her uncivil.
Yeah.
Like I imagine she is like snapping at some like unsuspecting party guest here yeah, or coming to the brink of it.
Some unsuspecting lady.
Uh-huh.
She's like, oh, can I have some tea? And then she's like, no!
It's more like, this tea is quite strong. It's like, I don't know. I wouldn't call it that.
She looked forward to their entrance as the point on which her chance of pleasure for the evening must depend.
Mm.
So the only thing that she can find pleasure in this evening is this one-on-one time with Darcy. If he does not come to me then, said she, I shall give him up forever.
If he doesn't come to me, like, when the gentlemen re-enter the yeah. room, they're like, this is Darcy's chance, you know?
This is a little, I mean, it's kind of like in the same vein of when she promised that, or she when she said that, like, nothing in the world, not even like Jane and Bingley's like happy marriage could assuage Elizabeth's embarrassment at Mrs. Bennet's behavior. This is like a similar over melodramatic. Man.
She's being a little hyperbolic here. But it is also, like, if we were to put ourselves in Elizabeth's shoes, I'm sure it feels incredibly infuriating. Like, what is Darcy up to? Like, here he is, like, tripping all over himself to make himself agreeable to my aunt and uncle. Mm-hmm. And, like, putting down, like, thousands of pounds so that my daughter won't be, like, estranged and ashamed forever, yeah. Well, right? My sister, Lydia. Yeah. And yet now here he is, like, acting super distant. Like, we don't even know each other.
Yeah. What's his game? The gentleman came, and she thought he looked as if he would have answered her hopes. But alas, the ladies had crowded around the table where Miss Bennet was making tea and Elizabeth pouring out the coffee, in so close a confederacy that there was not a single vacancy near her which would admit of a chair.
Mm. More like sort of like the etiquette of these dinner parties, you know, the daughters of the house would conduct this like tea and coffee service for everyone.
Yeah, and it's like just when she thought that the time would come for Darcy to come up to her, it was just like everyone clamors over to get the coffee and tea, and there was not even space for a chair for Darcy to sit on. And on the gentleman's approaching, one of the girls moved closer to her than ever and said in a whisper.
Moved closer to Elizabeth than yeah. ever, yeah.
And said in a whisper, The men shan't come and part us, I am determined. We want none of them, do we? Damn it, girl.
I know. This is like, who is this character?
Who cares?
Where did she come from?
I know.
And she's like, no, we don't want any men around us, right?
Yeah, well, this is one of the, probably one of the victims of Elizabeth's uncivility.
Hey, maybe. Maybe it's a slight revenge. I don't quite know. I don't quite know how to place this character, other than he's just like an obstruction to what Elizabeth wants.
I guess maybe it could be one of the Longs, one of Mrs. Long's daughters,
maybe,
or one
yeah.
of the other families
this
here.
This unnamed girl. Like, we don't want any men around, do we?
Darcy had walked away to another part of the room. She followed him with her eyes. Envied everyone to whom he spoke, had scarcely patience enough to help anybody to coffee, and then was enraged against herself for being so silly.
Mm-hmm.
So at least she, you know, she realizes she's acting kind of silly right now.
Yeah, but he's also pushing her to it. Well, okay, so and then Elizabeth has this reflection. These are her thoughts here, mm-hmm. like Austin quoting her thoughts. A man who has been once, who has once been refused... How could I ever be foolish enough to expect a renewal of his love? Is there one among the sex who would not protest against such a weakness as a second proposal to the same woman? There is no indignity so abhorrent to their feelings. So I think this is also, she's feeling silly because it's like, how could I ever have even thought that Darcy would proffer a second proposal after turning him down the first time?
Yeah.
Like, that's an indignity, like... most, the vast majority of men would never subject themselves to.
Mm-hmm. She was a little relieved, however, by his bringing back his coffee cup himself. And she seized the opportunity of saying...
Is your sister... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Is your sister at Pemberley still?
You know, here, I'll read Darcy. It says, yes, she will remain there till Christmas.
And quite alone? Have all her friends left her?
Mrs. Ainslie is with her. The others have gone on to Scarborough these 3 weeks. Mrs. Ainslie is like her governess lady in waiting.
She could think of nothing more to say, so that is the crux of their conversation. But if he wished to converse with her, he might have better success. He stood by her, however, for some minutes in silence. And at last, on the young lady's whispering to Elizabeth again, he walked away.
I imagine this is the same young lady who
bailed
him out the first time. and I think it's not like there's a lack of things that Elizabeth wants to talk to Darcy about. It's more so like, what can I talk to Darcy about? What can be spoken, right?
Yeah, in this room.
Uh-huh. And that's why the onus is now on Darcy. Like, Darcy can tell me what subjects he wants to talk about by continuing the conversation himself, right? Mm-hmm. But instead, he kind of just stands there awkwardly, as he's wont to do.
You want to keep going?
Yes. When the tea things were removed and the card tables placed, the ladies all rose, and Elizabeth was then hoping to be soon joined by Darcy, when all her views were overthrown by seeing him fall a victim to her mother's rapacity for whist players. In a few moments after, Darcy was seated with the rest of the party.
Yes.
So, tea is over, tea tables are being brought away, the card tables are being brought out, and Elizabeth's hoping that she can be joined by Darcy now, but Mrs. Bennet, like, scoops him up to sit at her card table playing first, right?
I guess Mrs. Bennet must really want to play whist, because I feel like Darcy is also the last person Mrs. Bennet would want to play with.
It's just her rapacity for whist players, I guess. Yeah, she's just grabbing whoever's around, and Darcy happens to be in her way. He's a victim to her rapacity. Elizabeth now lost every expectation of pleasure. They were confined for the evening at different tables, and she had nothing to hope but that his eyes were so often turned towards her side of the room as to make him play as unsuccessfully as herself. So why is Elizabeth playing unsuccessfully?
Well, because she's distracted.
Yeah.
But she's also, the one hope that she has for the evening is that, oh, maybe Darcy is playing just as badly as I am tonight because he is also distracted.
He's also just as distracted, yeah.
We don't know how well he's playing tonight. We just know that this is what Elizabeth is hoping.
We know Elizabeth's playing poorly, and she's hoping Darcy is also for the same reason.
Mm-hmm. And she can't see him, so she's like, oh, well, maybe his eyes are turning towards my direction, and then he is playing, and then he'll be playing just as badly as I'm playing right now. A lot of stuff going on in Elizabeth's head. We're getting, like, we are getting, like, a play-by-play of what is going on in her brain.
And I love also, like, the positioning of this isn't a party. There's so many people around. But it also, it's clearly, like, the two spotlights are just on Elizabeth and Darcy. So, I continue to say, Mrs. Bennet had designed to keep the two Netherfield gentlemen to supper. So, like, to the meal, another meal, right? But their carriage was unluckily ordered before any of the others, and she had no opportunity of detaining them.
So that ends the party.
Yeah, Mrs. Bennet wanted to keep Darcy and Bingley to stay for supper, especially Bingley. But unfortunately, they order their carriage before anyone else does, right?
Yes.
And Mrs. Bennet does not even have the opportunity to invite them. Or detain them, as Austin says. Well, girls, said Mrs. Bennet, as soon as they were left to themselves, what say you to the day?
I love, just to interrupt for a second, I love that also, like, in true Jane Austen fashion, like, you don't even see the rest of the party leave. You don't even see the party coming to a conclusion. It's just like, the two Netherfield gentlemen order their carriage, and then the party is over, and now the Bennets are left to themselves.
Yeah, that's effectively the end of the party.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, what are we going to do, learn more about this girl who blocked Darcy out?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Let's just keep moving. And it's also the end of the party for Jane, Elizabeth, and Mrs. Bennet.
Yeah,
like, the objects of interest are gone.
I'm sure once Bingley and Darcy left, Mrs. Bennet was like, all right, party's over, everyone out.
Everyone get the hell out. No supper. No supper for anyone. Okay, well, she's still feeling pretty happy, despite the fact that she didn't get to detain them, because she says, what say you to the day? I think everything has passed off uncommonly well, I assure you. The dinner was as well-dressed as ever I saw in my life. Best-dressed dinner. The venison was roasted to a turn, and everybody said they never saw so fat a haunch. The soup was 50 times better than what we had at the Lucas's last week.
Yeah, wow, what a precise way to measure the quality of soup. 50 times better
than the trash they eat at the Lucas's. And even Mr. Darcy acknowledged that the partridges were remarkably well done. And I suppose he has two or three French cooks at least.
Mm.
Okay, so I think this is one of the, even though we don't get to see this scene, one of the most pertinent and important scenes of this chapter. And what does this tell you? That even Mr. Darcy acknowledged to Mrs. Bennet that the partridges were remarkably well cooked, even though I'm pretty sure he has some French cooks in his place. Two or three at least.
Well, I'm going to take what Mrs. Bennet says with a grain of salt, because I don't know if, we don't know if Mr. Darcy actually said it was remarkably well done.
Mm.
For all we know, he could have just said it was well done. But Mrs. Bennet is going to, you know, if you give her an inch, she's going to take a mile.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it goes to show that he's trying. He is at least speaking to Mrs. Bennet, and he even complimented on her cook's cooking.
I trust her enough to believe that Darcy made some kind of complimentary remark, which I think is Darcy putting himself out there, trying to, like, make himself be a little conciliatory towards the Bennets, right?
That is another true instance of, what's it called, condescension on Darcy's part, that he would even compliment Mrs. Bennet's dinner tonight.
Her partridges. Although it's true that I'm sure he has much better cooks at Pemberley.
Yeah.
And I feel like Volume 1 Darcy would have acknowledged that. He would have been like, these partridges are dry, you know. I have French cooks at home. But here's Volume 3 Darcy being like, they're well done. All right, Mrs. Bennet continues.
But also, Mrs. Bennet is still attributing him to his wealth. Like, he said my partridges were well done, even though I bet he has two or three French cooks at home. Like, she has never, like, Darcy's monetary value is never far from her head.
Well, that's all he is to her at this point. There's no, like, Bingley is more of a human being. Although he's still, like, a wealthy man in her eyes. I think, you know, he transcends that to some extent, where Darcy is purely just 10,000 pounds walking. But, and it's a good, yeah, and that's why he is the ultimate example to hold up of how well this dinner is. Like, even he complimented it. Mr. 10,000 pounds. Mrs. Bennet continues, and my dear Jane, I never saw you look in greater beauty. Mrs. Long said so too, for I asked her whether you did not.
Okay, well, that's...
it's that not was that, for compliments. Yeah,
it's not that Mrs. Long said it, like, provoked, like, oh wow, Miss Jane looks, I've never saw Jane look in greater beauty. But it's like, it's more like Mrs. Bennet's like, haven't you, you've never seen Jane look in greater beauty than tonight, isn't that right, Mrs. Long?
Yes.
Which also makes me think all of these other compliments. The dinner was as well dressed as any I ever saw. The venison was roasted to a turn. Everybody said they never saw so fat a haunch. I'm guessing Mrs. Bennet fished for all of these compliments. Probably. Even the venison. Or not even the venison, even the partridges.
Even the partridges, yeah. Okay, so Mrs. Bennet's like, Jane, you never looked more beautiful. And Mrs. Long agreed when I asked her. And what do you think Mrs. Long said besides? Ah, Mrs. Bennet. This is Mrs. Bennet quoting Mrs. Long now. We shall have her at Netherfield at last. What does that mean?
Oh my gosh, that Jane will become the patroness of, or not patroness, the
mistress.
The mistress, of, yes.
Yeah, of Netherfield Park, which yes. means she will marry Bingley. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Long, who we've pretty much only heard Mrs. Bennet trashing up until this point.
And now we don't even get to hear Mrs. Long speak. We're hearing Mrs. Bennet parrot Mrs. Long talking to Mrs. Bennet.
Yeah, well, this is how to get. Now Mrs. Long is Mrs. Bennet's favorite person because she said the thing that Mrs. Bennet wants to hear, the ultimate compliment she wants to hear more than anything, which is Bingley's going to marry Jane, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
All right, yeah, so Mrs. Bennet's like, she did say this indeed. I do think Mrs. Long is as good a creature as ever lived. And her nieces are very pretty behaved girls, and not at all handsome. I like them prodigiously.
Yeah, I bet.
So this is great. So now Mrs. Long is a favorite of Mrs. Bennet's, because she has said the one thing Mrs. Bennet wants to hear the most, which is Jane is going to marry Bingley. And now that she said that, Mrs. Long is the greatest creature I've ever met, right, has ever lived. And her nieces are very prettily behaved, and they're not at all handsome, which means I like them even more, because they offer no competition to my daughters,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, yeah. Like, oh yeah, she's the best person I've ever met, and so I'm gonna trash her nieces.
Well, it is a trash, but I think, like, in Mrs. Bennet's warped mind, like, this truly makes her like Mrs. Long more. That she has nieces who are unattractive.
Oh, yeah.
If her nieces were more attractive, she'd like Mrs. Long a little less because then they'd represent competition to her.
Mm-hmm.
But now she's like, she gets to feel like, not only is Mrs. Long saying what I want to hear, but she's still beneath me, which makes me feel very good, right?
Right. And they're not even, it's interesting that Mrs. Long, it's not her daughters, it's her nieces. Like, Mrs. Long just didn't bring her daughters around or doesn't
Maybe
have
them. Maybe she doesn't even have daughters. Yeah. And
Mrs. Bennet still can't, resist just subtly dissing her nieces.
Yeah, well, Mrs. Bennet views any young, like, woman as competition to the Bennets.
Yeah.
And, like, since she doesn't really interact with young women, she is interacting with the older connections of these young women, right? So I guess that would be, she sees Mrs. Long and she's like, she does have nieces, which are competition, but they're not very handsome, so I like them.
I like the whole family.
Uh-huh. Mrs. Bennet, in short, was in very great spirits. She had seen enough of Bingley's behavior to Jane to be convinced that she would get him at last. She,
at last.
Mrs. Bennet. Well, maybe, okay, the she could either be Jane, that Jane would get him at last, or that she, Mrs. Bennet, would get him at last, which I kind of like a little better.
Well, yeah, I think if you keep reading, the she is more obviously Mrs. Bennet.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I'll read the whole thing. Mrs. Bennet, in short, was in very great spirits. She had seen enough of Bingley's behavior to Jane to be convinced that she would get him at last, and her expectations of advantage to her family, when in a happy humor, were so far beyond reason that she was quite disappointed at not seeing him there the next day to make his proposals. So yeah, this is all Mrs. Bennet. That she, Mrs. Bennet is the subject of this sentence all the way through.
Yes. And I like the proposals, plural. Proposals not only to Jane, but to the family.
To her,
and
Mrs.
And to her,
Bennet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she saw Bingley talking to Jane, and she's like, nice, I'm going to get Bingley. I'm going to get Bingley as my son-in-law.
She would get him at last.
And of course, her expectations are so far beyond reason that she thinks Bingley's going to show up the very next day to propose.
Yeah. Okay. It has been a very agreeable day, said Miss Bennet to Elizabeth. So that's Jane.
Mm-hmm.
The party seemed so well selected, so suitable one with the other. I hope we may often meet again. The party seemed so well selected, mm-hmm. so suitable one with the other. I hope we may often meet again.
It's almost like everyone just paired up, right? They had the perfect match in the party of people to talk to. Elizabeth smiled.
Lizzie, you must not do so.
So, yeah, Jane knows what that smile means.
You must not suspect me. It mortifies me. I assure you that I have now learned to enjoy his conversation as an agreeable and sensible young man without having a wish beyond it.
I love that Bingley's just his. Yeah. We know who he is. Right. You know?
Yeah, Jane knows from Elizabeth's smile that Elizabeth knows Jane is thinking about Bingley.
And this is more the same, like, BS song that Jane was singing at the beginning of the chapter, which is just like, oh, you know, we're just friends now, right?
Yeah, just the two of us talking with no one else in the room except amongst ourselves. Yeah, we're just friends.
It's proof that we are totally over each other.
I am perfectly satisfied from what his manners now are that he never had any design of engaging my affection. Okay, Jane.
We'll finish this and then we'll talk about that, I guess.
It is only that he is blessed with greater sweetness of address and a stronger desire of generally pleasing than any young man.
All right, so I think the weird logic that Jane is, like, employing here is that this, like, the fact that Bingley was so charming and talked to me all night is not proof that he is interested in me. It's, in fact, proof that he was never interested in me, and this is just what Bingley is always like, right?
Yeah, that he's just blessed with greater sweetness of address and a stronger desire of general pleasing than any young man. The fact that he was so charming and so nice and talked to me all night long is just proof that he's just generally an above average pleasing young man.
Right. And if he had, like, specifically been targeting me before, well, like, if he had been specifically targeting me before, this is Jane's thoughts, then he would have proposed to me, right? But the fact that he didn't and now he's back acting the same must be proof that he never had any intention of proposing. And this is just how he behaves.
I guess so, yeah. She's really doing a lot of... Her mental gymnastics is all over the place right now. But that is her... that is, like, the direction that her logic is going towards. Is, like, all proof to anyone else, all proof of his favoring Jane, Jane interprets as him just being his usual self.
That's just his God-given charm. He wasn't flirting with me before. He just can't help but be charming. And now I realize it for what it is, right? Okay. You are very cruel, said Elizabeth. You will not let me smile and are provoking me to it every moment. So she sees right through this.
Yeah, Elizabeth finds this hilarious.
Yeah.
How hard it is, in some cases, to be believed.
And how impossible in others. That's Elizabeth.
And Jane goes.
Well, what is this? So Elizabeth, I mean, I'm sorry. Jane is like, how hard it is in some cases to be believed. Like, Elizabeth, why don't you believe me, right?
Yeah.
And Elizabeth is like, and how impossible in others.
Basically just like, well, it's impossible for me to believe it in this particular instance because it's just wholly untrue.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane goes, but why should you wish to persuade me that I feel more than I acknowledge?
Elizabeth responds, that is a question which I hardly know how to answer. We all love to instruct, though we can teach only what is not worth knowing. Forgive me, and if you persist in indifference, do not make me your confidant. Okay. Oh, and so ends the chapter. But let's talk about this last passage from Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Jane asks the question, like, why are you trying to convince me that I love Bingley, right?
Yeah.
When I am telling you I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth, her first response is, I don't even know. I can hardly answer that question, right? And then she goes into this sort of moralizing tone. We all love to instruct, though we can teach only what is not worth knowing. It's a little tough to penetrate.
Yeah, it is interesting, or it is a little confusing why Elizabeth slips into this, like, universal voice now.
I think it's important to remember the question that she's answering. The question that Jane specifically poses to Elizabeth is, why are you trying to persuade me that I feel more than I acknowledge, that I love Bingley? Why are you trying to persuade me that I love Bingley when I'm telling you I don't, right? Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth is like, I can hardly know how to answer that question, but here is like a universal maxim, and hopefully it helps you towards reaching an answer, which is, we all love to instruct, though we can teach only what is not worth knowing. So it is within, according to Elizabeth, it is within human nature to love to instruct, right?
Mm-hmm, to love to teach people, tell people what to do and think.
Though we can only teach, all humanity can only teach what is not worth knowing. Even though we all love to instruct, we don't have any useful information to impart, right?
Mm.
That's one way to look at it. And I think if you're looking at it in that reading, then she's almost talking about her own situation. She's like, I'd love to, you know, instruct you on how to behave around Bingley when me, myself, I'm just as lost in my situation with Darcy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any useful information to give you because I'm basically in the same situation as you and Bingley, in that there's this man hanging around and I don't quite know his feelings.
Yeah.
You had another possible interpretation, right, Grace?
I can hardly even remember what it was anymore, but it's like, we all love to instruct, though we can teach only what is not worth knowing. Like, we all love to tell people what to do and what to say, but, like, who am I to tell you what to do or say, kind of? Like, I don't know you as well as you know yourself. Like, it's almost like, fine. Like, I give up. Like, if you're gonna say that you don't love him anymore, then I can't make you believe any other way.
Maybe it's also like,
but maybe it's also like a little, what?
What were you gonna say?
Oh no, what were you gonna say?
Well, it could also be like, it's not worth. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's not worth me trying to persuade you that you do love Bingley, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're just going down that same road that we went down the first time, right? Maybe it's not productive for me. Maybe it's not even worth you knowing that you actually love Bingley despite what you say, right?
Yeah, because then she also says, like, you know, forgive me. Like, all right, I relent. Like, my fault. I'm sorry for pushing you to say something that you maybe don't feel.
Mm.
It's like, even though, like, Elizabeth 100% knows Jane does not mean what she says, but it's not up to Elizabeth to make Jane see that. It's just Jane's going to feel what Jane's going to feel, and whether or not she wants to say what she feels is not up to Elizabeth.
It could be Elizabeth acknowledging, like, maybe you know best, Jane. It's not healthiest for you to acknowledge what your true feelings are, right?
Yeah, maybe it's like, all right, maybe I also, like, pushed a little bit more than I ought to. Like, I keep, like, disbelieving you right now, and maybe that's my fault. Maybe that's, I'm pushing a little too hard.
Okay, so I think those are kind of the two, and if other listeners, this one specific sentence is, like I said, a little hard to break down. So if you listeners out there have any better ideas, feel free to email us. We are all more than open to hearing them. But I think the two kind of ideas we had is, A, Elizabeth is saying, like, even though we all love to instruct, even though I love to talk like I know what I'm talking about, I'm just as ignorant in these matters as you, Jane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or B, even though we all love to instruct, even though I love to, like, tell you how you're really feeling, like, maybe it's not worth you to try to convince yourself of this absurd position that you've taken. Like, maybe it's not worth you, Jane, to convince yourself that you do love Bingley.
Yeah. And then she also, you know, ends her little speech with, and if you persist in indifference, do not make me your confidant. If you insist on living in this la-la land where you don't love Bingley, then, you know, I can't convince you otherwise, but don't make me a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't drag me into your little charade.
So I think this is, like, the emotional thrust of this speech, which is, A, in whatever way, yes, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, right? This is what Elizabeth's saying. Like, yes, maybe I am, you know, not the right person to instruct you. B, sorry about that. But C, don't, like, tell me anymore about how you and Bingley are just friends now, right? I don't want to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, right. At the very least, Elizabeth can stop trying to convince Jane of how she feels, but Elizabeth will not stand by as Jane attempts to convince Elizabeth that this is how she feels.
Right. Yeah. Like, maybe you're right, Jane. Maybe I shouldn't interfere. I'm sorry about that. But also, don't keep, like, telling me these, like, this BS that you and Bingley don't care a whit about each other, right? If you want to keep talking about that, don't make me your confidant. Yeah. Because I'm only going to smile.
Exactly. Because I'm going to smile, and then you're going to get mad at me for smiling. Uh-huh. But I can't help it because you're saying things that only make me smile.
Right.
All right. So, short and sweet. Mm-hmm. Like we said, not a whole lot of stuff is happening, but I think a lot of groundwork is being laid as we speak.
And tension, I think, is being built too. Like, we are not in the clear in this story yet. Yeah. There's still two big questions at play, which is what's going on between Jane and Bingley, and more importantly, what's happening with Elizabeth and Darcy? Or, we know what Elizabeth's thinking, but what is Darcy thinking?
Yeah. I think we can chalk it up to the fact that Darcy is not in his, he's not in his, like, he doesn't have his home field advantage anymore. He's not at Pemberley. He's not amongst his friends. He's amongst the, probably the worst people he's ever met in his life. So of course that's going to make him uneasy and aloof.
Definitely. That's one reason why he's acting so awkwardly.
And secondly, I think this is sort of like a little bit of Darcy's, I think we discussed this in the previous chapter, but Darcy is, he has to eat crow a little bit. He has to watch Bingley and Jane and realize that he misjudged Jane entirely and that actually Jane and Bingley are, like, perfect for each other. And he has to watch that unfold. So I think that's also why he's being really, like, cold and aloof. Like, he's just observing right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, I think, like, that one scene where Bingley's looking at Darcy with, like, the half-alarm smile or whatever, that's, the laughing half on, I think it is.
Yeah.
That's like the indication that maybe this visit is about Bingley and Jane, and Darcy is trying to observe Jane and being like, was I really wrong? You know, is this a good match for Bingley? Are they like, is Jane as interested in Bingley as Bingley is in her, right?
Yeah. The half laughing alarm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's sort of like, it's maybe like half like, I told you so, Darcy, and maybe half like, waiting for Darcy to finally give his blessing.
Like, do you see? Right?
Yeah.
So I think that's another reason Darcy is being especially withdrawn. Like, not only is he in an uncomfortable situation around Mrs. Bennet, but his focus might be on Jane and Bingley right now.
That's further punishment for Darcy, is that he has to sit in through a whole dinner with Mrs. Bennet by his side.
But he shows a little magnanimity if I'm saying that wrong, but he shows a little bit of growth in the complimenting of the partridges.
However much of a compliment he actually paid, it was enough for Mrs. Bennet.
Yeah, and well, maybe the effect, whatever he actually said, it was a felicitous effect in that Mrs. Bennet felt very complimented.
It was a raving review from Mrs. Bennet that Mr. Darcy said whatever it was he said.
And see, I think he's just like kind of a socially awkward dude in general.
He's socially awkward. He doesn't know anyone here except Bingley and Elizabeth.
He's not a Bingley. Like, Bingley could walk into a room of strangers and be friendly with everyone. And also, Bingley doesn't feel, like, awkward about talking to Jane all night in a room of strangers, where Darcy is not quite the same person. He's not going to just, like, pull Elizabeth aside and, like, let's have, like, a conversation right now.
Yeah, that's true. He's much more private than Bingley that way. His affection for Elizabeth does not need to be, like, is not, like, on full display like Bingley's is for Jane.
And maybe he's still a little unsure of Elizabeth's feelings towards him, you know?
That's true, yeah. Maybe, you know, from another POV, we get just as much frustration on Darcy's end of this dinner than Elizabeth.
Yeah, well, Darcy doesn't know that Elizabeth knows.
That's right, yeah.
About everything he did for Lydia.
That's true. Or does he? Maybe he thought, we'll see. Maybe he knew that the gardeners would eventually tell Elizabeth.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think that was, like, that was not, like, a conscious plan.
No, and it would not be in his character to do that. All right, so that's the chapter.
Yeah, we'll hopefully get more into Darcy's thoughts here. We are coming, I've said this, like, the last three episodes, but we're coming toward the end here.
Mm-hmm, yeah, the usual characters are back. Mr. Bingley's back. Yeah,
And it feels very much full circle. Here we are again with the same, even though so much has happened in the meantime, with the same two preoccupations of the first volume, which is Jane and Bingley,
yes,
Elizabeth and Darcy, even though the relationships are totally different now, especially with Elizabeth and Darcy.
Yeah. I feel like my first time reading this, I wanted to say that, like, oh, Jane and Bingley, they could have gotten married in chapter one, but I don't know. I think they've done some growth. They've done some growing up, too.
I think so. Yeah, this is a good thing. This will be interesting to look at, like, in the next chapters we read, whether we know that the Elizabeth-Darcy relationship improved so much more, changed in drastically over the course of this year.
Yeah, basically like a 180.
But like, why is this a necessary process for both Jane and Bingley to go through, other than just for tension, right? For dramatic tension.
Other than just as vehicles for the Darcy-Elizabeth relationship.
I think there's got... Austin doesn't do anything, you know, without purpose.
Yeah.
And, like, characters go on journeys for specific reasons. So I think there are reasons why Jane and Bingley had to go through this torturous event. But I don't know. Do you have any ideas? I think this is also something we could look for in the next chapters.
Yeah, maybe... I think I'm going to save these thoughts maybe for the next chapter. You know, none of these characters are written perfectly. None of them are perfect characters. And so I think... They all reveal, like, with every, like, good quality, there is sort of, like, the flip side of it. So with Jane and Bingley are very good people, but they also have their own flaws that they need to maybe address before they deserve each other.
Mm-hmm. If nothing else, like, it's easy to see Bingley, like, was way too dependent on the opinions of friends.
Mm.
So if he can have a journey where he discovers that, like, his most trusted confidant, like, might even say that he was wrong about some advice, that would be a lesson to Bingley to be, like, to think a little bit more critically for himself, maybe, in the future.
Yeah. Well, we don't know what's happening yet.
Yes,
we don't know what's
true.
Happened. Uh-huh.
We don't know what's happening. Yeah. All right, let's leave it off here.
Okay.
So if you have comments, questions, concerns, interpretations we might have missed, yes, anything you want to say, you can email us at what address, Grace?
At secondimpressionspod@gmail.com.
All right. Well, so until volume 3, chapter 13, I'm Tom.
I'm Grace.
Bye.